Welcome to the Writer's Well podcast, conversations about writing from craft to wellness with Rachel Herron and Jay Thorne. Hello, Jay.
Hi, Rachel.
How are you?
I'm doing a whole lot better than I was last week. How are you?
I'm doing worse than you.
I was going to say slightly worse, probably, right?
We traded spots. I knew I was getting sick Monday. Last time I talked to you, I had that suspiciously scratchy throat, and I kept telling myself it was allergies for 2 days.
Ugh.
And then it just knocked me down. I don't work with mothers anymore. And mothers are always, you know, they bring in all the germs and contagion and cooties, and you build up your immune system. And I don't have that. I need to go lick the railing at BART or something like that.
God, like, that's so gross.
I don't have enough immune system. I need more. How about you? Did you get some sleep?
Yeah, I did. I'm definitely myself this week. It took me a few days. I had to listen to my body. I was trying to ignore it and be like,
I
no, I know I'm fine. I'm fine. I wasn't fine. So,
yeah, you left a good comment in the notes that you slept a full 12 hours at one point. Is that right?
I did. Yeah. Monday night into Tuesday morning. I can't even remember the last time I slept that long in one stretch. I just, yeah, it's been
a
while.
I can't remember that either. did you wake up or did you just sleep that whole time?
No, I slept straight through. I went to sleep at, it was around 7. It wasn't even dark yet. And I was like, I'm sorry, guys. I'm like, everyone, please keep it down. I got to go to bed. And I woke up. Like, I did hear my wife getting ready for work at one point, and I was just like, I'm not even going to get up. Yeah. And then I looked up and like the bed was empty and it was 7:30 in the morning. And I was like, oh, all right then.
That is exactly what you needed.
Yeah.
And you listened to your body about it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's going on in your world writing wise? Let's catch up.
Yeah. Writing wise. Working on some projects. I sort of recommitted to first drafting, and I have a feeling this could be a whole show topic, but I felt like over the past year or so, I kind of drifted from that. Meaning that like I write a lot, but like it's not all, a lot of it is revision or it's editing other people's work. And I just kind of recommitted to first drafting. I was like, no, damn it. I'm a writer. Like I should be doing this more often. And so I have a couple of projects where I've put time in my calendar now that is dedicated first drafting. It's like there as a task. So I feel pretty good about that.
I love that. Totally.
Yeah.
I feel like I have been edging toward that myself. I have felt like I just haven't been doing enough first draft writing, although I have been doing quite a bit. But I love that commitment. I have to tell you something.
Yes,
that
please.
Is very cool. And I haven't told you about this or asked you if I could, but I figure you won't mind. I hired an assistant, a virtual assistant, although he's also an in-person assistant because we live in the same town.
Oh, cool.
And he's so great. And I just want to tell you about that experience.
Yeah.
So you might know him from comments and stuff, Edward Giordano. His name's Ed. Uh-huh. And I have been meeting with him and his friend Rachel for brunch for years. This is what we do. We go to writer's brunch and we sit down and Ed tells me every single thing I'm not doing that I could be doing because he listens to every writing podcast. He's a writer. he's a science fiction fantasy writer. And he tells me everything I should be doing. And then I say, I'm not doing any of that. None of that. And so we went to brunch a couple weeks ago, like 3 weeks ago. And he said, I just got fired. And I said, he wasn't fired, but he was laid off due to circumstances. Hmm. And I said, I'm very sorry. Also, you should be a writer's assistant and you need to be mine. So
he snagged him up just like that.
I snagged him up and he's ideal because he knows exactly the industry. And he has been able to see in all of my products, all of this list of products that I have not utilized,
mm-hmm.
that he is helping me do and format and all of this stuff. He did a transcription for my podcast, or like cleaned up a transcription for my podcast. And I decided, no, you are too valuable for me. I'm going to find somebody to do that for, $5 an episode or whatever, but for you, I need you for these high level tasks. So I just wanted to put him out there. And if you don't mind, I'd love to put his email in the show
Please,
notes.
Please, yeah.
I want to keep him unemployed.
Yes.
I can only afford to have him for 4 hours a week. So he needs more work and he knows this industry inside and out.
Awesome. So
he's fabulous.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about working with him. He's exactly what I was dreaming of when I hired that one gal who.
Yeah.
It did not work out.
Well, yeah, just shoot me his email. I'll definitely drop it in the show notes for sure.
Perfect. And are you still, do you have one? Your daughter works for you.
My daughter works for me, and my son is awesome. Starting to dabble on Upwork. And so he's looking to do some low level administrative VA work. It doesn't necessarily have to be for authors, but any kind of scheduling, posting,
I would have been all over that at their age. Like that would have been my dream.
I know.
I used to work in, offices as a secretary, and I just loved things like filing and sending letters and typing things.
Well, my son is going to be 17. So he's looking at things like working at Wendy's or sitting on my laptop in my pajamas. Like he's already learning that there's advantages there. So
exactly. Well, he's got a role model to look up for.
Yeah,
for
hopefully.
Dad's upstairs in his pajamas. Do you ever shop for work in pajamas?
Do I ever do what?
Do you ever write in pajamas?
My pajamas are usually shorts, so I guess I do. Yeah. Hey, I gotta I wanted to tell a quick story if you're cool with it.
Please.
All right, because I know my wife will never listen to this. She doesn't listen to anything
we're
do
safe.
Or read anything, right?
Tell us all.
But it's our 20th anniversary this week, and
wow, congratulations.
Thank you. It's kind of weird because we've been together like 27 years, and she's not romantic. I'm not romantic. We don't do any of the stuff we're supposed to do, like remember our anniversary. But I was laughing because I told this story at the event, and the people there were like, that's pretty funny. And someone said, you should tell that on a podcast. So I'm going to tell it real quickly, but
I can't wait.
They're like, how did you meet your wife? And I've told this story before. I said, well, we were both working at Camelot Music. She was a new hire. She was a cashier behind the counter. I walked in on my day off with my friend Jeff, and I saw her, and I turned to Jeff and said, I am going to marry that girl.
You did not.
I did. I swear. And I didn't say anything like gross, like I'm going to F her, or I didn't say like anything sappy, like I love at first sight. I was just like, I'm going to marry her. And he was like, whatever, because she was so out of my league. Right.
God, but that is the cutest thing. Oh, ever.
That's what everyone said. Right. And they're like, well, what did she say about you? And I said, well, it took a few years before the conversation even came up, and we were at a party somewhere, and I told that story, and she kind of rolled her eyes, and someone was like, well, what did you think when you first saw him? And she said, I thought he worked at a gas station. And that was it. That was all she said. And I'm like, I don't know if I should be offended by that. I don't know what that means.
I do know what that means, and I think you should be offended.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, yeah. I've tried to pretend it wasn't offensive, but I'm like, no, I think you were taking a shot at me.
Maybe she liked that, like the hot, dirty gas station attendant kind of fantasy. Go with that. Go with that.
One point later, she's like, but you were really nice, but I thought you worked at a gas station.
I'm like trying to compartmentalize this in my brain, saying, don't use it in a book. Don't use it in a book. Get where I hear things and I'll use it in a book and somebody will call me on it later. I'm like, I did not intentionally steal it.
You could totally steal it. I don't care. I'm not that proud of it. So happy anniversary to her, even though she'll never hear this.
Oh, that is really, really beautiful. What are you going to do?
Nothing.
We'll have to do something after telling this story.
I guess I'll do something. Yeah. I'll make her dinner or something.
Or go to the gas station and buy her like a gas. No, seriously, like a gas station keychain, like the 76 keychain, and like present it to her from her favorite gas station.
Buy her an unleaded fuel only sign, something really sweet.
I think you should. That is adorable. Thank you for sharing with me. Yep. That makes me so happy.
Good. I thought you'd get a laugh out of that.
I'm actually going to tell my wife about it. All right. Update on some Patreon people. Lefty's back with us.
Yes, Lefty.
Yes. And I would like to take this moment to share, as I did on my podcast too, we don't mind when people come in and out with varying situations. We just love you to be around.
Yeah, life happens.
And yeah, exactly. And Maggie, darling Maggie, upped her pledge. So now she's in our Slack channel, which I should go look at. But I love Slack. Slack is my jam now. You're the one who kind of got
my
me
fault.
Into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really great. I have like 7 daily Slack channels now that I've
Nice.
It's wonderful. So thank you guys for supporting us. We're at patreon.com/thewriterswell if you guys want to check out our levels of patronage, and we really love having you around.
Yes,
and
thank you.
We should do another Q&A soon too.
Yeah,
we'll get that on the books. Excellent. What about comments and stuff?
Comments. We're going only back to episode 143, which was the last episode, and the question was, what have you learned from writing that you've applied in other aspects of your life? And I swear Christopher is just trying to provoke me in his kind British way.
I think he wants to see your head explode.
I think he's trying. He was in there with a comment about editors again. And I have a new theory. I have a new working theory. And I'm sure Christopher is going to tell us if this is true or not. I think there's one of two things that has happened with Christopher, because I don't hear what he's saying from virtually anybody else. So here's my theory.
Wait. First say what he says.
Well, he doesn't believe that anyone needs a professional editor.
Or that he needs a professional editor.
He does. He doesn't. Yeah. Okay. I think he's either, number one, he's never worked with an editor, so he doesn't really understand what an editor does, because he's talking about things like grammar and word choice and criticizing, and that's not really what a good editor does. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that he has worked with an editor and had a really bad experience.
Oh, I would love to know.
So I could be completely off. Christopher, please forgive me if I am totally off base here and out of line. But it's just a theory I have now based on some of the comments he's written.
I want to point out what Becky said. I do want to note that any editor who is not actively terrible is not going to tell you what they tell you what to say. They'll help you figure out where you want to say is not coming across clearly and how to communicate it better, which I thought was a really good point. There are so many times that I thought I've made a good point, but I have accidentally left things in my head that are not on the page, and my own unconscious bias makes me completely unable to see those until somebody else says, I don't understand what you mean.
Yes, and that's where I've found the most value from editors is being asked questions. I'll have an editor that will ask me a question. I'm like, oh shit, right. Like, didn't even think of that. And that's a program, like a grammar checking program is not going to do that for you.
Right. And these are about ideas. And I will say that all of my editors usually just ask me a question and leave me to figure it out.
Yes.
But it means that they just haven't gotten it. And, you know, grammar and stuff, that comes later. That's a copy editor. They're cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see what Christopher has to say in the comments. Yeah. Amy said that she thinks deep focus is easier/harder for some people. So I like that. I like that. You know, some people have, it's easier for them to get in deep focus, and for other people it isn't. So I thought that was an insightful comment there. We had, Becky also had some great, a great comment in there about how she thinks the hardest part is starting. And I love that. I think that's so true in so many ways. Just
so
getting
true for so many
started,
people.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those first 5 minutes.
Yep. That's big. Edwin said steady steps gets him to the finish. I like that too. I think you don't necessarily have to binge write or binge anything. If you just do little pieces at a time, that'll get you there. That was great. Kate is wrestling with her perfectionist tendency. She said she's learned that writing that is that perfection is an illusion. And so that's dangerous.
That's something that I have to learn all the time. I learn with every single book, with every single thing I do, I want to be perfect. And I've just accepted that's not going to go away. And I have to accept that it cannot happen.
Right.
And I'm always learning a little bit more.
Yeah. It's almost theoretical at this point.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And then we had, I think this is Stephen S.A. Schneider. I said that, his life's been has been derailed in recent years, but he's discovering who I am again, remembering who I was, and writing has helped him with that. So I love that thought of sort of getting in touch with who you are as a person. That's a great concept. And also Mary said that she's learned how to dip deeper into what's going on around her, and she talks about noticing things like how the air feels, the way the concrete platform feels when the subway train pulls in. I love that. That's what to me makes writing really rich, is when you can pull those types of very detailed observations out of your life and transfer them to the page. That's so powerful.
And what is that noticing? Meditation.
Yeah, it's training your brain to pick up on this little things.
Exactly. Speaking of picking up on little things, you'll notice that I am riding the mute switch. Didn't quite miss that one. Because all the dogs are in here panting. It's hot. And I'm just so worried that that's all going out. So I don't have someone panting behind me. It's just Clara. It's a dog.
It's all good. We can't hear her. So,
okay. Thank goodness. All right. Well, I have a question for you today.
Yeah, I'm hopefully prepared.
I think you might be prepared. I think you might be overly prepared, in fact, because I took it out of your writer's email that I got on Sunday. I always read your writer's emails. There are very few emails that I always read. I would say there's probably about 10 that I get on a weekly basis that I look forward to and go, oh, I'm going to read this. So I did that with this one. You're welcome. So this is a quote from you, and then I'll ask you the question. I'm going to quote you.
This is weird. Yeah.
I know. Always fun. The moment I begin asking myself, is this worth it? Is the moment I've hit a conflict that is going to force a choice, give up or stick with it. So my question is, what have been your most difficult, is this worth it moments in writing?
Oh,
I'm quite proud of myself for coming up with this.
That is a killer question.
Isn't it good?
So
what have you
good.
Been your most difficult, is this worth it moments in writing? And you could take that from any time frame, any of that.
You know, I'll tell you the one that's most difficult. It comes to mind not because it's necessarily the most difficult on the scale of difficulty, but because of the frequency in which I ask myself this question.
Ooh. Right.
And that is this whole writing thing worth it?
I want you to go deep with that. Tell me how that comes up, how it feels. Is it as existential and terrifying as that sounds to me?
It probably is.
Oh, shit.
this is probably a question that I've wrestled with almost entirely since I've become a full-time writer. So I think I need to make that clarification. It probably isn't something I would have considered when I was doing this part-time. Mm-hmm. But I've had these moments. I'm gonna sound like such an asshole, but I have to say the truth.
We've done that before.
We have done that before, right? there have been, I've finished really productive days or very successful days, however I measure that, and sometimes I'm like, okay, like, is this it? Like, this is what I've wanted, and now I have it, and it feels like the behavior has been normalized now. Like, it doesn't feel special anymore at times.
Everything does normalize, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's been proven cognitively that when we can get used to everything, the worst things, and we can get used to the best things.
Yes. And so there are these times where I'm like, and it's even worse when something isn't going well. That, like, and it's the same question, like, is this worth it? And I've had these moments where I look at my royalty statements, especially around fiction, and I'm like, all the time and energy I'm putting into learning craft and storytelling and practicing and publishing millions of words, and like, it's not like, I'm not where I want to be with my fiction. And I'm like, is this all worth it? Like, why am I doing this? And I
How
have
does that
those
feel when you ask yourself that,
like, the feeling in my gut is like, you don't have a choice.
what do you mean by that? Is it you don't have a choice because you put your family's livelihood on the line, or you don't have a choice because this is who you are?
Yeah, both. Like, part of it is like, this is what you're here for, so you're just going to keep doing it. And then I think of like the historical examples, which I've obviously now are blanking on, but I think Picasso, maybe, these people who, William Blakely, he's another example. These people who were died penniless and broke, and then now they're sort of cultural, you know, they're institutions. Edgar Allan Poe, you know, and I'm like,
Picasso.
Yeah.
No, Picasso was huge. Never mind.
Van Gogh.
Van Gogh.
That's who I was thinking of. Yeah. So I have like, and that's a really egotistical thing to say. I'm not putting myself on that level, but I'm like, well, you know, maybe that's what I'm put here to do. And I don't really know what's beyond that. And I just have to do that. And maybe I'll never see that, the physical manifestation of the wealth that I think I should see from that action. And it's hard because there's that. And then there's that of like, is this worth it? Like, is this all there is to it? And then there is like, is this worth it? Because I know I could go get, I know I could be hired as a classroom teacher in an instant and make 2 to 3 times more money than I'm making from my fiction. And I'm like, so, and I, it, it like half the effort. And I'm like, so is this worth it?
You're still in your chair. So seriously, you have decided that it is worth it.
Yeah.
At least for now.
Yeah. But it's a hard question, and I want it to go away, and it won't. And I wonder too if like that's just part of it. Like I don't want to name him because he's a really private guy, but I had coffee with a who we would consider like a big time author recently, and this is a guy who makes tens of thousands of dollars a month. At one point was making millions of dollars a year strictly on fiction. That's it. No services, no editing, like none of that kind of stuff. And I had a pretty frank conversation with him, and he was like, you know, he's like, it's not everything you think it is. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, I know what you're thinking. He's like, you're looking at me and like, he's got, you know, houses and cars and he has no financial worries. And he's like, that's not what fills you up. Like, that's not, he's like, there were many days I had to get up and I had to search for meaning. And he's done things and he's, you know, changed some things. But his point was like, we look at the people ahead of us on the path and the quote unquote successful people. And we think like, when I get there, it'll all be great. And and two things happen. We never get where we think we're going to be. And when we think we get there, it's not what we thought it was going to be in the first place. I don't know. I'm shitting all over the place here. I feel like I don't know if I'm answering your question or like.
I think you absolutely are. And there's no way I want you to go toward or away from that. How does it feel this morning that you are still choosing to do it?
There's a slight bit of desperation in me, I think, right now in this time and place. Like maybe I'm speaking for you. I feel like you and I are kind of in a similar place. Like we're doing it, but we're like kind of hanging on with the tips of our fingers. Like, month to month, like we've had these conversations even in private. We're like, I don't know, a little lean this month, And so, I don't know. I think it's part of me just being like that Irish Catholic heritage, that stubbornness of like, I'm just going to outlast this. Like, I'm just going to be gritty and it's going to kill me or I'm going to do it. And I don't know which is going to be, but.
You and I really have that in common too, that just sheer stubbornness. I think I've only ever met one or two people more stubborn than me in my life. And I think you and I are equal. Like, I don't think you're more stubborn than I am, but I feel like we're equal. Those are really good, really honest answers. And I want it because I knew that there was something below that email that you sent out and I wanted to.
There always is, right? I mean, it's like your Patreon essays. There's more to it.
Exactly. There's always something more and deeper. And that's how we do it. That's how we explore things in our lives is we write about them. And so I'm really happy you're writing those emails. You should put the link to join that too when you put Ed's email in there.
Okay, I will. I'll link to that. But tell me, what have you been asking yourself about is it worth it?
For me, it's the same thing. It's about money. There is this, there was this famous study that came out a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, that said after you make $78,000 a year, $78,000 a year, happiness doesn't go up.
Yes.
Did you see that one?
Yeah,
there's
I know which
no
one you're talking about. Yeah.
Return on happiness, which, when it came out really floored me because I was already making that amount. It must've been about 3 or 4 years ago that it came out. Cause I know I was working at, Dispatch, and I remember thinking, if I were a full-time writer, I would be happier. And I do have to say that as a full-time writer, I'm happier. I am. So that's, I mean,
I am too. I mean, don't misinterpret what I said. I'm definitely happier day to day.
Day to day. For me, the, is it still worth it? That question is always around finances.
Yes.
And recently I was extremely frustrated by the medical plan that I have through Lala's work. We always had Kaiser, but then her company was bought out by somebody else. And now we're Blue Cross Blue Shield, which I'm convinced is trying to kill everybody in America. And it's just the worst here. It's the worst. So I was trying to figure out how I could afford an extra $1,500 a month to put myself back on Kaiser at a good plan. And I remember thinking I would, you know, I'd get this for free if I went to work at Trader Joe's, you know, part time. I don't even have to work full time at Trader Joe's to get that. And so it's when those questions come up, and I feel like you a little bit. I don't always have a great answer to that. And the fact remains that I may go get a job at Trader Joe's, you know, in 3 months. Right now I've put it off. I'm always putting it off. I don't need to do that now. I am on target to still break six figures this year. And I think I'm on target to make more than I did last year. But I was teaching Sophie Littlefield and I teach this workshop called Finances for Authors. And it's really looking at not only just what writers make, which, you know, I like to talk about, but finances in general and how we can't stick our heads in the sand and how debt is an emergency and all of these other things. And I both love and hate when I say that, you know, I've got 26 books under me, and last year I made $42,000 on everything, and that was including a portion of a large advance, and just to see people's faces fall, you know, like they can't live on $42,000 a year, and they live in the Bay Area and they only have one book, and the rest that you and I do is just clawing and scratching and you know, doing a little bit of this and a little bit of Patreon, you know, and a little bit of that, but I think there's two things for me that keeps telling me that this is worth it. Number one, it's what I have to do, kind of like you. Like, I have put myself in this, and this is the way I'm keeping my half of the family supplied with income. And number two, it's what I've always wanted my whole life, and I do love it just as much as I thought I would. And number three, and I wonder if you feel this too, I hear from people that I am actively making a difference in their lives. Mm-hmm. And the frustrating part of that is that I do not usually hear that around my fiction.
Yeah.
I hear that was a great book. Loved the book. But when I hear people say you've changed my life, it's from the podcast. It's from this podcast. It's from my email newsletters. It's the coaching for sure. Teaching for sure. People who come back to me 2 years after they've taken an in-class person class with me and show me their published book, you know, or they've gotten an agent or whatever. And that's when I feel like I could do nothing else. And I do kind of wish that they said, you know, that novel made me become Mother Teresa, you know, and that's never going to happen. But as long as I do have that ability to reach out and help people, then I feel like this is completely worth it. It's all worth it.
Yeah.
And I hear that about us, by the way, because I think I get out into the writer's world a little bit more than you do, although lately you've gotten out a lot. And I'm always hearing from people, you know, you and Jay. So,
yeah, it's, you know, but it's funny that you, like, each writer, especially if I think each full-time writer, has their own cross to bear. Like, everyone has something, everyone has shit that they have to deal with. And I think you're one of the few people in this industry for me who I recognize as kind of like in the same trench, in that it's the finances are like razor thin. Mm-hmm. And neither
of us have a husband or wife that is bringing in a shit ton of bacon
or even an adequate amount. Like my wife is not, like, we would default on our mortgage if I wasn't working for some reason. Like, there's nothing to tighten up. There's no, we'll cut back. Like, no, it.
Like, oh, you know what? And one thing I wanted to say about that too is another point where I go, is this worth it? Is when I look at our retirement savings, which are nothing compared to anybody else. Like, I mean, I would tell you, but then I would really be humiliated. Like, I cashed out my 401k to buy a house that we foreclosed on 15 years ago. Oh. So like, it's that kind of thing. We just don't, we just, we're building it now, but we're in our late 40s, lawless 51. And that's the point at which I go, fuck, do I need to go to Trader Joe's, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's, it feels like a race. Like it's a, you know, it's a race to, am I going to hit the tipping point before I have to get a job or not? That's,
that's the race.
Right. And that's how, that's why I'm asking myself, is this worth it? Because I know, like, as much as I love what I'm doing right now, I am expending more energy in this than I have in anything else my entire life. And it's not to say that I like, I coasted when I taught or I phoned it in. I did not. I gave all of those students all those years, everything I had. I didn't hold back, but so much of that came so naturally to me. And once I was in a position, you get the golden handcuffs like you had at the dispatch center and you can just show up. You just walk in the door and
you know how to do it. You don't have to think about it. You just turn on.
Yes.
Plus I had the real benefit in my golden handcuffs is that, you know, because I worked so many nights there were hours at a time where I didn't have anything to do but write. Like you never got that. I actually got paid to sit on my ass and write when the phones weren't ringing.
So yeah.
That was hard to do.
Yeah. And you know, and some of the consequences of that, like as much as I love helping people, there's a finite amount of fuel in the tank. And I know that I'm currently taking way more clients than I should be. Like because I have to, and it's not anything against them. And like I said, I'm giving them everything I've got, but because I'm doing that, it forces me into these situations where I'm like, I'm exhausted. Like, and I'm asking myself, is this worth it? Like, the amount of clients that I'm dealing with to cover the living expenses, like I could spend less than half that time going back to teaching and make twice as much money. Like I'm making half of what I made when I left my teaching gig.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I don't know what, like where this is going or, you know,
dear listeners, Jay and Rachel quit on episode.
Yeah, that's it. This is the end of it all.
What we're going to tell you is that it's over. Patreon.com/thewritersquill.
No, but here's how we pull this back to a positive finish. I'm going to speak for you as well.
Okay.
I think now we're both in a position where because we have done this and we have faced like the darkest depths of employment or unemployment, I'm not as worried now. Like when I first went full time, I had these panic attacks and like my chest would tighten up and I would think like, oh my God, I just quit my job. And what if I don't sell books or what if I don't get clients? Now I'm like, all right, what if I don't sell books? What if I don't get clients? I'll just go do X, Y, or Z. Like that level of panic is gone. Like it would be sad for me not to be able to write, but now I'm not afraid of like, okay, I'll just go get another job. I'll just get a job. Like it's not the fear that it was.
Well, and exactly circling back to the way we started this conversation, you can get used to anything. And I don't mean that we're used to artillery fire over our homes and, you know, mortar shelling.
Yeah.
It's not that, but we are kind of used to the fear and used to saying, okay, I see you, fear. Now I'm going to make a phone call. Now I'm going to get good words, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think also to bring it back to a positive note, even though I brought this up and even though I know we might go a little bit dark in it, there's still such joy and appreciation and gratitude when I get up and go do this. Mm-hmm. And one of the times I feel it the most is in like the afternoon, if I have a lunch planned with a writing friend where we're going to write and I'm driving that direction, I'm like, holy shit, I get to go sit down with a friend. Yeah. And I worked such prohibitively constricting hours for so long. People always knew me as the person who couldn't come to anything.
Yeah.
Lala was always at everything alone. And now I get to go to things and we're both living the dream and we are not unhappy about it, people, but we're realistic.
I had the same thought on Saturday when it was, It was 70 degrees and sunny, and I was on my patio in a lounge chair with my Kindle, and I was quote unquote working. And I was like,
I know,
this is awesome. You know? So like, yeah, I'm the same as you. Like, I don't take it for granted. I absolutely love it. I'm thrilled every day I get to get up and control what I'm going to do with my time. That's really the only thing I was asking for, was that type of freedom.
But
the reality of the stuff is still there. And you know, is it worth it? Is a question that you know, is just, and maybe it'll keep coming up forever. Maybe no matter where we end up, we're always going to be asking that question.
That question for me, I've always answered it, hell yes. Mm-hmm. But I promise you, I will let you know if that changes. And I'm,
yeah, likewise.
Conversation.
Likewise. I almost feel like it's out of my control at this point. Like, I just, like, yeah, is it worth it?
But you know, it's not.
You know, it's not. No,
it's actually not.
It's not. But I mean, what's out of my control is that I feel like now I've found my true calling, and I can't do anything but write. Like, that's what, you know, that's what's out of my control. So it might not be for myself always, but it'll be writing, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, that was
such a good question.
How can we rephrase it for listeners? Well, just tell us, what do you do when you think, is this worth it? Is this worth it to write? And oh, this is what I wanted to say that I didn't say before, is that honestly, my is this worth it question was so much bigger and harder to answer before I finished a book, before I first published a book, because then I didn't know if it was worth it.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I could do it yet. So if you are in the beginning of your career and you're asking, is this worth it? That you are in the hardest part of that question, I believe.
Yeah, so I would agree with that.
Let us know how you feel about that.
All right.
Christopher, tell us about editors.
Yeah.
For we love you.
Oh my. Yeah. That was a great question. Wow. You kind of got me reeling now.
I know. In a good way.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Happy writing to you.
Same to you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.